I'm always astounded by how deep some discounts go. I've walked past clothing stores, for example, both here in Australia and in the UK, where you see signs up that say 200% off, and you go, how can that be? How does that work?
Ladies and gentlemen, the next event on the card is a heavyweight marketing bout for the small to medium business owner. In the red corner, from Paradise, Australia, is David. And in the blue corner, from an English paradise, is David.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of David versus David. This is our podcast for the small and medium business owner, where we discuss all things marketing. My name's David Pritchard here in the UK, and my co-host, David Council, down there on the other side of the world, is wide awake listening because he's been up all day, whereas I've just woken up. David, how are you doing, mate?
I'm bloody good. How are you?
I am also tipped up.
Did you have a pleasant night's sleep?
Yeah, not bad actually.
Did you have a
I
pleasant
did.
night's sleep?
I had it.
No bad dreams?
No, no bad dreams. No bad dreams. I was thinking
Yeah.
there, but no. I
Where
had
were
an
you put?
early night last night, and I woke up a bit early, but about 5, I reckon. But then I drifted straight back off to sleep, and in fact, my alarm woke me up for this call. So that's quite an unusual thing, actually.
Are you one of those people who eat cheese before they go to bed and then have dreams?
I do occasionally do that, you know, when I want a really wild
Yeah.
Night, you know, I'll just eat a ton of cheese and then, well, hey, who knows where you go?
On that basis, though, shouldn't every Italian in the world be like constantly dreaming?
I think they are, aren't they?
Because, you know, so many of their foods are rich in cheese. So, yeah, anyway, just a thought.
I dream about it. I'd love to have. I should have done it years ago, but I'd love to spend a year living in Italy, actually. Go and buy
Yeah,
some,
me
you know,
too.
I've read the books, you know, buy the old farmhouse in the Tuscan countryside and, you know, deal with the builders and end up with a great place and just sit in there sipping Chianti and watching the world go by with a Dolce Vita. But hey ho.
Yep, I'm sold. Let's go.
In reality, here we are in the world of marketing and businesses looking to do a little bit better tomorrow and today than they were yesterday. And you know, we discussed, I mean, sometimes you know, everything goes whizzing along for businesses and all good stuff. And then occasionally, yeah, it's time for today's topic, and it's time for a sale, perhaps. You raised this one, David.
I
You know,
did.
it's an interesting question because I see things on the high street, on the internet, and so on, and you know, sort of think, why are they having a sale? So let's go into the nuances, the pros and cons, the upsides, the downsides, and other aspects of having a sale.
I get asked this question a lot. You know, do you think I should go on sale? How much should I discount? You know, how much more will I have to sell if I go on sale? It's a really tough question. And it comes back to something that I've mentioned before. When I was working in radio very early in my career, and the guy who bought all of the tea towels and was selling them out really cheap, so effectively they were on sale for him. But he reached the point where he saturated the market. So you've got to be, you know, really very careful about having a sale and knowing that you're doing it for the right reason. Because let's say you discount your product, for example, and that's your sale technique is discounting. Because it doesn't have to be. That doesn't have to be how a sale goes. You can have a value add sale, for example, where you add to the product. You see car dealers doing that an awful lot. You know, if you buy this particular model car, we will also throw in. You know, so that's still a sale because, you know, effectively you're altering what would have been the normal price of the car. And there's any number of ways that you can go to a sale. But you've got to ask yourself, if I'm reducing my margin, and that's what you're really doing, how much extra do I have to sell to make the same amount of money? And this is a pivotal question. Are you going to sale because your business is quiet? Are you going to sale because you want to have a lift in cash flow? Are you going to sale because you have bought badly and have too much stock of something that is costing you money to sit on the shelf? And these are the reasons that you've got to think about. There are other reasons to go to sale as well, but these are the main reasons that people do go to sale. Now, if you've bought badly and you've got stuff that you need to get rid of, then that's probably the worst of all of the scenarios. Because if they didn't want it when it was expensive, just by dropping the price doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to want it. You might have just bought a dud product. So maybe that's, instead of discounting it, you should be thinking about value adding it to, you know, adding it to something else so you can get rid of it.
I suppose the alternative to that is you have a viable product. You bought a product that could sell, but you're actually just offering it for too much money compared to perhaps other people in the marketplace that offer either the same or comparable products.
Absolutely.
In which case, you're probably going to be heading down the better route. At least you're going to be shifting your stock. You've got to wonder why are you selling it for more in the first place? You know, have you bought too expensively yourself? Have you bought too expensively?
Yes. I was talking to someone the other day who wanted to use a sale as a mechanism for bringing new people to their business. That was an interesting discussion because it's a legitimate thing to do, but they had no ongoing strategy. All they knew was they needed to get more customers into their business, but when they achieved that customer, they didn't have the follow-up mechanism in place to do it. And you know how I bang on about, you know, always have a plan. When you see these telemarketing commercials, you know, by telemarketing, I actually mean on television, not on the phone, where, you know, if you buy this particular whiz-bang towel, you will also receive this, you will also receive that, you know, and they build it up so you've got this, you know, great value-added package. Oh, and it's only this much money. And you look at it sometimes and go, how the hell are they making any money doing that? Well, yes, they have bought well. Okay, so that's, you know, step one. But what you're not seeing is the sales process that's in place as part of their sales close. So you ring them up or go to their website and say, yes, I want to buy this product. Here's my credit card number. And immediately they start upselling you to buy other things or you start receiving a chain of emails offering you other things because it's not in that first product that they're making their money. It's in the 25 things that they're going to offer you afterwards that they're going to make their money.
Yeah.
You know, if they can get you to buy one or two more things, they're in clover. So that is something to consider. You must have a strategy for what it is that you're going to do. So because a lot of people look at it and go, well, you know, my margin might be, you know, 30%. And all of a sudden I'm offering a 20% discount. So 2/3 of your margin is just being flushed away. You've got 10% less. So you've got to go and try and make that 20% somewhere else. We've always spoken about the McDonald's, do you want fries with that? You know, that's just an upsell, but it's a great upsell. And now more people, when they buy a burger from McDonald's, buy French fries just as a matter of habit. You don't even have to do the upsell on that particular product. They've now moved on to upselling other products. You know, the ice cream sundae, the apple pie. I went through a McDonald's drive-thru the other day and the delightful girl said to me, would you like an apple pie for just $1? No. Yes.
You're not going to say no, are you?
Yeah, well, that's right. How much is it normally? Oh, well, normally it's, you know, this. Your dollar. Yeah, okay, I'll have one of those. So, you know, they've just moved their upsell. So when you're going to have a sale, what is your strategy? Don't just think about it as being a discount. Think about the different ways that you can go into a sale, you know, value adding or, you know, having that strategy to on-sell as you're going. For example, can you offer free shipping? You know, if you've got an online business, that's a great way to have a sale. You can have a free shipping sale if you don't normally do free shipping. But keep in mind that shipping is a hard cost.
Yeah, absolutely.
You're not going to be able to go to, you know, Australia Post or what do they call the postal service in the UK? British Mail? No?
Royal Mail.
Royal Mail, sorry, yes. You're not going to be able to, you know, nip down to the local post office and say, listen, I've got potentially 500 things to send out. How about you do those 500 for 250? Will that be okay? You know, I've got them in the car. So, you know, they're just not going to be interested. So that's a hard cost. There's going to be no discount level on that. So you're wearing it, which is why most people will offer a service or a product that they've already got as that value add on the way through.
Yeah, indeed.
What about a buy two, get one free? sale. You know, that's another way of doing it. So you, if they buy two at full price, you're giving them one at you know, no cost at all. So that is fantastic because you've achieved full margin. So 60%, for example, if we're using our 30% discount. So you've also shifted three of the product that you're having trouble moving out the door. Another thing also when it comes to sales is how are you positioning the stock in your business or on your website? You know, so if you've got, think about the supermarket. How do all those lollies get at the checkout? Well, it's not by accident. They're put, and the stuff that goes on the end of aisles, not by accident. That's all, you know, the psychology of buying to get you to buy those things. Well, it's the same for your website. Are you putting the right products in front of the right people in the right places on your website to get them to make that additional purchase? I don't know if you've ever bought a book from Amazon, but you can't go buy that book straight through to the checkout. They offer you other things on the way through. I don't think they've quite got to the "Are you sure?" Stage, but it won't be long, you know, before you're going to make a purchase and you get a little pop-up that says, "No, really, are you Dave? Are you sure?" Because other people have bought these other books. They're pretty good. You should buy them too.
It's when they get to the stage at that checkout bit where they say, "We're linked to your credit card company. And we know you still have a sort of available credit of, $3,000. You sure you don't want something else? You know, go on, spend it." But no, they'll get there one day.
That's exactly right. Have you bought a television lately? You know, would you like a television?
But no, you're right. You're quite right, David.
Another thing that you should also consider is how often should you go to sale? And I think that this is, in fact, the hardest question of all. Because I believe a lot of people go to sale because they've got cash flow issues rather than anything else.
Yeah, this is one that I think you can really do damage with, actually, because if you are perceived in your marketplace as always being on sale, the worst cash flow in the world as a result, because I know software companies, software is quite an easy thing to discount in a way because there is very little cost of provision. You know, it's delivered free over the internet. The more, you know, if you've got some software for sale on your website and one person buys it today for $100, you've made $100. If 50 people buy it, you made $5,000. You know, so if you halve the price, well, you make $50, you make $2,500, da-da-da-da-da. Of course, you've got the cost of writing the software in the first place, of the cost of supporting the software, the cost, other costs that go around it. But, you know, but leaving those out just for the time being. But if people perceive that you have sales regularly, you know, if you have a 30% off or 50% off sale for this product, you know, And they see this on a regular basis, they're never, ever going to buy anything off you at full price. Maybe that's your marketing ploy. Maybe actually your products are never intended to anybody that buys it for the full price of $200 or something. You know, that was never the intended price in the first place. Maybe you've always intended it to be marketed. You know, you're only ever really hoping for $100, and that is effectively your normal price. And so you know, your permanent sale price isn't going to do you that much harm. And that's a bit naughty, by the way, and something you would get slapped for, certainly.
It's
certainly
very naughty.
In the UK, you would get slapped for that. If you have a product, it has to be only available at the higher price for so many days in the previous 6 months and so on. You can't just flick products in and out of sale and make up prices like that. But, you know, whatever you think the real price is, but you want to be careful that your brand isn't perceived as a discount chain brand, and unless that's the business you're actually in. You can do yourself harm with that if you do too many sales too often.
Well, and if you also do them too regularly. So if you always have a sale, like many of the big department stores, for example, always have a sale at Christmas time and end of financial year. So they become like calendar events. So people wait for the sale because they know that you're going to discount, and therefore your months prior to that start becoming affected. You're pulling business into a different time zone, whereas you could have had it previously. So, you know, don't do it off a calendar. Do it off a plan that is constantly shifting and moving, rather than saying, "Oh, well, it's Christmas time, I better have a sale." Yeah. Really? Why? You know, because if you've got the same problem this Christmas as you had last Christmas, there's a different issue going on. Because I'm telling you now, all those customers, they're already out in the market looking to buy stuff at Christmas time.
Yeah, I was just thinking the worst response that the retailer or the supplier can have to that question, you know, about, you just said that about, you know, don't just have a sale at Christmas. You know, why should you have a sale at Christmas? And the worst response you could provide to them is, because our customers expect it. Too damn right. You know, if they're in that mode, I'm afraid you're doing yourself a favour, basically. Set the agenda for when people are expecting to buy from you, or when they will buy from you. You've got to be careful with that one.
And there'll be people listening to this going, but Dave, my competitors who sell exactly the same stuff as I do will go to sale at that time. And the actual answer to that problem is in what I just said, who do exactly the same thing that I do. Stop doing exactly the same thing as your competitors. You break your product up, do it in a different way so that it's too hard for the customer to compare apples with apples. If you know that someone else is selling the same product, then differentiate that product. Like we were saying earlier, value add to it. You know, and don't just do it at sale time, do it at different times.
Yeah.
So that, you know, you're giving people a reason to come to your business, not the competitor.
Yeah. And, you know, part of that, you also have to service and quality of provision and backup. And there's all these things you can add to differentiate yourself. If you are just competing on price, product A against product A in different stores, it's a downward spiral to making no margin whatsoever. And one of you will be out of business before long. And you just got to take the, well, hey, you know, I'll let them go out of business before me because I'm going to do something, I'm going to differentiate, I'm going to do something a little bit different that adds value, that gets people coming to me rather than somebody else.
Sometimes you don't even have to do something that's a little bit different. All you've got to do is actually tell people that you're doing it, because in many industries, the list of things that people do as part of their service and delivery of their products and services is the same, but they don't bother to tell anyone. And as a result, you can go out there and say, when you do this with us, we also do this, 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 and this. You've then framed the market and become the leader by saying, we do all of these things. And a competitor who also does it, what's the best that they can do after that? They can say, well, we do that too.
Yeah.
That's a much weaker position to be in. Me too. Yeah, you don't want to be me too.
Okay, let's say that you've decided that, you know, you are going to do a discount. You've got a stock you want to get rid of. Is there a level of discount that's just not worth doing? Is there a level of discount that's what's normal? What would people expect?
I don't think there is a normal. I'm always astounded by how deep some discounts go. I've walked past clothing stores, for example, both here in Australia and in the UK, where you see signs up that say 200% off. And you go, how can that be? Does that work? Yeah. And yet they do it. It really comes down to how much don't you want that stock anymore? Are you willing to endure a loss to clean out some stock? Because it's about the cost of money. How much is it worth to you to have your money locked up in stock that's not doing anything? You know, could you have just put that money in the bank and earned a paltry bank interest off it and been better off? So the cost of money is the crucial thing. You know, if you're a car retailer, for example, you would have hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars locked up in stock, so which you're paying interest on more often than not, because very few car dealers are their own bank. So, you know, how fast do you have to turn your stock over before you should give the stock a name and make it a member of the family, because you're paying it to be there? So there is a number where you've got to know that every day that it sits on the floor, it's costing you money. And if you don't move it, you know, you might as well have discounted it, value added it, offered some sort of unique service deal so that you can get it out the door and get that money back to you so that you can reinvest it into something that's going to make you more money.
That's the opportunity cost.
Yeah.
What could you be selling instead that's going to make you more money than what you've currently got there? If you've got a physical store and you know, you've got stuff on the shelves and it's not selling, then you've got to think, well, yeah, that space is costing me money to rent, or, you know, I own that space. It's got retail floor space value. And, you know, if it's not selling for me, then what else can I sell instead? And if you've got something that will, you know, you think is going to make more margin for you, then that other thing is preventing you from doing it. So that's when it's time to do something about it. And that's when it's time to have the sale.
Absolutely. And it is one of the things that a lot of retailers don't do particularly well. You know, they don't know how long a piece of stock has been there, or they don't focus on it. So they allow stock to have been there too long. Have a walk around either your storeroom, if you're an online retailer, you know, where you've got all your stock sitting there, or if you're a bricks and mortar shop owner, and have a look at the stock. Has it got dust on it? You know, if it's got dust on it, It's been there too long. And your staff aren't cleaning the stock properly. But, you know, you've got to look at these things and say, well, gee whiz, I bought that. Now, that's been here for, a couple of months. You know, that's too long. Even in some businesses, a couple of days can be too long. It's about stock turnover. And that is one of the reasons why you would go to sale. Do you go to sale, for example, for the whole store or just for, you know, specific departments or product lines? And that happens a lot. Once again, who hasn't been in the supermarket all of a sudden to see that a particular line has been reduced? Now, is that because they've bought well and they're trying to pass the savings on? Or are they trying to get you to buy, you know, multiple items? I see this at supermarkets a lot, especially with soft drink. You know, buy one bottle, it's this much when you buy it. Buy two, though, and it's this much. That's what's going on.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think it's large stores, supermarkets, large retailers and so on. You know, pay attention to what they do. They're really analysing that the pounds per square foot, the dollars per square foot of every part of their store. That's why you'll suddenly see, you know, like a, you know, some stores have a cafeteria in the back, for example, or some parts of the store. Cafeteria, it's designed to draw you through the whole store. You know, it's got its value add for the store. But at the end of the day, they'll work out, is that cafeteria adding, you know, what's its cost per square foot? Could we get more by having a rack of items there instead? Could, you know, what's going to be the result? And they will analyze that kind of thing. If you, you know, one rack of items or one shelf of items and so on, what's the pound per square foot they're getting from that? And you know, if it doesn't meet their threshold, it'll be gone. And it'll be gone through either flogging it through another outlet or discounting it within the store.
Yeah, supermarkets are really good at stock control. Hey, and another question you've got to ask yourself is how long should the sale run for? You know, do we, you know, as I was saying before, it's not about, you know, how long has the stock necessarily just been there, but how long are you going to go on sale for? Because scarcity is your friend. So 1 day, 1 hour. We've all seen those sales, for example, where the price starts low at the very start, where you want it, because you want to generate those sales quickly, but goes up the longer you wait. And I've also seen the reverse ones. You see the reverse ones a lot, for example, in jewelry stores, where they do what's known as a progressive sale. So they'll start discounting stuff at 10% off, and then the next day it'll be 11% off and 12% off. And what you're actually doing is gambling that someone won't buy the stock that you're sitting there watching. And also that the retailer won't remove the stock from the shelf and therefore remove it from sale. You know, it's not that it's always getting sold. Sometimes that the retailer goes, well, you know what, there's this beautiful diamond ring and I'm willing to sell it for 10% off, but I'm not willing to sell it for 20% off. So when the discount gets to 20%, I'm just not going to put it out for display. Yeah, it's gone.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, that's a good point for sales. Scarcity is either time scarcity or quantity scarcity is a great thing to work on. And again, depending what your market is, you know, things like electronic goods, by electronic, I mean non-physical goods, e-goods, software and services and stuff like that. You know, that's going to be a time-based scarcity involved in that. Physical goods, of course, you know, you may only have so many of them that you want to get rid of, and once they're gone, they're gone. So a discount that starts low and builds up can be a great way to get the most, maintain the most greatest margin whilst you're still going through the sale process. And of course, you know, sooner or later, you have to say there is a time element to this, that otherwise you're always perceived as being that item is always going to be on discount, and nobody will ever want to pay anything like the normal price for it. So this all goes back to, why are you having a sale? Why are you considering a sale? I'd like to just go back to one of the early comments, actually, David, you made there, is a sale for bringing in new customers, for acquiring new customers. You know, what's the best way to do that? What's a good technique, good strategy for that?
Well, actually, let me give you both sides of the coin, because sales can be both for acquiring new customers and for getting a larger sale from an existing customer. So for example, you might have an existing customer and if you can get them to make three purchases a quarter rather than making two purchases a quarter, it's done its job. So a technique for acquiring new customers, for example, would be one that the banks use all of the time, where they're trying to get you to take on a loan with them or take on a credit card with them. So they make an offer. At the moment, Coles Supermarkets have launched a credit card in Australia, and they're offering zero interest for 6 months for people who sign up to that particular credit card. Now, that's really effective because I know that I've only seen that ad once. So that message clearly got through to me. And that's all about acquiring new customers. On the flip side of that, you can send a message to your existing customers and offer them what is effectively a loyalty sale. So you're not going to go out and price all of the shelves. You're just going to offer people who have shopped with you that you've put the paperwork in front of an incentive, an offer, a discount, because they've bought from you in the past. I've had hardware stores, for example, that have customer shopper nights. So you can only come by invitation and they open the store to the people who have shopped with them before and say, okay, well, this department or this aisle or, you know, these products have this particular discount off them. And they shop when no one else has access to the shop. So it's a bit like being a famous rock star when they open the whole department store up for you to just to go and individually shop with. So if you're a customer that's never been to that shop before, you can't access that.
Yep.
I actually think that that's a really good technique. I'm not as big a fan of the discount to the new customer that's not available to the existing customers, because I think we've all been in that situation with a bank where all of a sudden you're sitting there going, well, I've already got a credit card with you. And all I have to do to go and get that other discount is go and get another one. So why don't I just go and get another one and cancel the existing one?
Absolutely.
So no, there are techniques for getting those both groups.
Yep, indeed. Good way to annoy a lot of people, that is. And in fact, my bank in the UK here, it now says that, you know, we offer the same products to everybody, new or existing. Yeah, they're actually making a big thing. You know, that's their marketing. They're making a big thing of something that annoys a lot of people. Why should I, as a loyal customer, be penalised for sticking with you? You know, so they're encouraging loyalty. They've at least seem to have found the old, 80% of your business comes from your existing customers, and they're working on trying to enhance that reputation. So about time too.
And they could have done it so much more easily, you know, as well, because they could have said, you know, if you're an existing customer, we will do this for you.
Yep.
If you're a new customer, we will do this. Don't you wish you were an existing customer of our bank?
Absolutely.
So, you know, they're trying to provide the carrot to sort of say, you know, you might not get as big a offer when you come in for the very first time, but boy, when you're here, do we really look after you? You know, we serve you. But, you know, I think they all lost their way a bit there at some stage and went, no, it's cheaper to buy new business. Don't worry about the existing business that we're losing.
Yeah, no, it seems ridiculous to everybody, but hey-ho.
Yeah, that's right. That's probably enough on sales, I reckon. We've covered a lot there.
I think we've been here, there and everywhere with sales and the various aspects and some of the nuances of it and so on. So I think we ought to maybe wrap it up there. Where can people find us, David?
Well, come to the website, boys and girls, davidversusdavid.com, or you can come and find us on Facebook, www.facebook.com/davidversusdavid.
Indeed.
Or do us a really big favour. If you like this, then please go to the iTunes store in your area and leave us a 5-star review, because that helps other people find this podcast and be helped as much as you're getting helped. Just probably don't mention it to people you're in competition with. No, I'm kidding. tell them as well.
Indeed. Okay, so I guess from here in the UK, me, David Pritchard, it's over and out for this week, and catch up with you next week, people.
And from me here in beautiful paradise in Tasmania, please, folks, come down. Summer in Tasmania is beautiful. You've heard about spring in Paris? Summer in Hobart is just glorious. Come and give us a visit. Call in and say hi. Until next week, this is me saying goodbye as well. See you later, gang.
Goodbye.
You've just been listening to the David versus David podcast with David Pritchard and David Council, helping you get knockout results with your online marketing and advertising.
Please keep in mind that the ideas, opinions, and information shared in the show are those of the hosts and do not reflect those of their past employers.